Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
And now, Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
We need to guard that spirit. We have to guard that spirit. Let it always inspire us. Let it always be the source of our optimism, which is that spirit that is so uniquely American. And let that then inspire us by helping us to be inspired to solve the problems that so many face, including our small business owners.
This has been Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
Stu Does America.
Something about Kamala Harris where, like, she gets a word stuck in her head. It's like when someone plays Cotton Eye Joe and you just, like, it's in your head for the next 12 hours. Like, inspired gets in her head. So she says it, like, five times in the same paragraph. It's agonizing. By the way, you can get your Kamala Namala gear. At StuDoesMerch.com. Code is Stu10 to get 10% off your entire order. You can check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. We've got the Kamala Harris greatest hits. You can check out their comedy bit. And live news reaction. We've got one coming up tomorrow night after the debate. So don't miss that vice presidential debate coverage. We're going to have live coverage here, by the way, on Blaze TV. I'll be hosting it, so you want to check that out as well, hopefully. Click the bell for notifications and click follow. We're so close to 100,000, and we just, like, if 1% of our audience just went over there and clicked follow, we'd be there. So please do that, if you don't mind. Chuck Holton is going to be here with an expert update on the Middle East that is just blazing out of control right now. The Washington Redskins, or Commanders, or football team, or whatever they want to be called today. That whole drama is adding another chapter. We'll let you know about the latest. But we're going to start by doing Kamala's border Hail Mary. Yes, this is where we are right now. She's on the border. She's tough on the border. She's got people with vests around her, and she wants you to know about it. Harris vows to keep the border crackdown that Biden has, supposedly. The United States is a sovereign nation. I mean, this was all racist when Trump said it. Remember that when he said stuff like that? But now Harris is tough on the border. She's a border hawk. Believe her. She's telling you the truth. I swear. Here's her border ad claiming the exact same thing.
Kamala Harris has never backed down from a challenge. She put cartel members and drug traffickers behind bars. And she will secure our border. Here's her plan. Hire thousands more border agents, enforce the law and step up technology, and stop fentanyl smuggling and human trafficking. We need a leader with a real plan to fix the border, and that's Kamala Harris.
I'm Kamala Harris, and I approve this message.
What idiot could believe that? And I mean this sincerely. Like, if Ted Cruz released an ad tomorrow, said, I'm Ted Cruz and I approve this message. I'm Ted Cruz and I am the strongest senator in the Senate arguing in behalf of women to have 9-month abortions. And I want the highest taxes possible and I will take all of your guns. I'm Ted Cruz and I no one would believe it. It would fly in the face of everything you knew about the person so that everyone would just dismiss it immediately. The media would rightly mock Ted Cruz for releasing that ad, and we'd all think Ted Cruz had gone completely insane. And yet here we are with Kamala Harris doing the exact same thing. That's what she's doing. She's completely lying. She's taking everything you know about her and reversing it and acting like you're supposed to believe it. What idiot would believe that ad from Ted Cruz? What idiot would believe the ad from Kamala Harris? The same thing. But yet, here she goes, back to the border. Look at me. I'm walking around the border as president. I will secure our border. Look at me. I've got a guy with sunglasses, and he's got a vest with a badge on it. And look at me. I'm walking in the dirt. Who would believe this nonsense? And by the way, after she tweeted that, as your president, I will protect our nation's sovereignty, secure our border, and work to fix our broken system of immigration, J.D. Vance responded to that and said, that's cool, but can you just do it now? You're the sitting vice president. And a lot of people fought back against that. And they said, do you even know what a vice president does? You're trying to get that job. You think that she controls that policy? She's only vice president. She can't do anything about this. Well, at the same time, they release this photo. This is her on a plane saying how she was briefed at FEMA. And she's heavily involved in this process with a vice presidential seal over her head. And seemingly headphones not actually plugged into her phone, which is, I mean, a little strange at this point. But we'll just take that one for what it is. But if your claim is, as Kamala's is, I guess, to believe the border stuff, that just, you know, Joe Biden wasn't good at this, I'll be good at it. I mean, if you want to make that case, you can make it, right? If you want to say, look, Joe Biden was an utter failure on this particular policy. Love the guy. He's 1,000 years old. He just drools all over himself every time we're in a meeting. And he's just bad at this. I tried over and over and over again to get him to do something, to get him to move on the border. And he just wouldn't do it. He failed you, America. I will not fail you. If that was your case, okay. I could take that. You're going to tell me that basically you were in this. It wasn't your authority. You tried everything you could, even though he gave you the border czar thing. He ignored all of your claims, all the great policies you had to put in place. He ignored you and did the opposite. You want to make that case? You can make that case with some potential theoretical credibility. But you can't say he did a great job and give us this nonsense of, wait a minute, I wasn't even vice president. I'm just vice president. I've got no control of the situation. You can't have both of those things. That doesn't make any sense at all. Now, if you told me, hey, I opposed all these things, I tried to pass tough border measures, he wouldn't let me, I'd question your sanity for not just bringing it up occasionally, at least hinting toward it while you were vice president. But at least that argument would make coherent sense. It's not true, and it's why she can't make it. But she also can't just trash Biden, because they have this weird middle ground where they want to hold on to the Biden presidency as actually effective. And he's this honored guy. He goes on The View, and everyone's like, oh, my gosh, Joe, we love you so much. We're so thankful that you did what you did. It was so selfless. Oh, your wonderful presidency ruined by a bunch of mean conservatives who somehow forced you out of the race or something by beating you too bad in a debate or whatever our narrative is this week. But we love you so much. They can't keep that narrative if they say Kamala tried to fix this thing behind the scenes. The truth is, of course, she didn't, but at least it would be a coherent argument. Now, of course, it wouldn't make any sense because Kamala Harris has been going after the Border Patrol like crazy. She's flipped her lid on that one. And now she's saying the Border Patrol needs more support, again, from an administration she's currently in. Watch.
Madam Vice President, can you share what the agents at the last stop talked about?
They've got a tough job. And they need, rightly, support to do their job. And they work long hours. They're very dedicated. And so I'm here to talk with them about what we can continue to do to support them and to also thank them for the hard work they do.
That's not true at all. Kamala, you're there to try to get people, dumb people's votes. That's what you're there to do. Now, of course, she's been smearing the Border Patrol forever. Here she is back in 2022.
First of all, I've been very clear about the images that you and I both saw of those law enforcement officials on horses. I was outraged by it.
They were lies.
It was horrible.
Wasn't true.
And deeply troubling. There's
Wasn't
been
troubling.
Now an investigation that is being conducted.
The investigation showed they were innocent.
Which I fully support, and there needs to be consequence and accountability.
Why would there be consequence when they were
human beings
investigation?
Should not be treated that way, and as we all know, it also evoked images of some of the worst moments of our history.
It evoked
where
images.
Where that kind of behavior has
how
been
did that,
used
how'd that
against
happen?
The indigenous people of our country. Against African Americans during times
it's a good
of slavery.
Thing, good time to laugh.
And, so I'm glad to know that Ali Mayorkas, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, is taking it very seriously.
God, she is terrible. It is utterly remarkable that the United States of America would have her as one of two options. How did she rise to this level? Don't answer that. Please don't answer it, because it's going to give you graphic imagery in your mind. But I will say this. The investigation happened. They were totally found to be completely innocent. There was no apology, nothing. She just trashed these people and then walked away and never looked back to see what happened. And honestly, she didn't want to know what happened, because she wanted to continue to use it even after the investigation happened. She trashed these people, and now she needs them, and now she's kissing their ass. It's despicable. Here she is back in 2019 talking about the border wall.
his quest to build a vanity project called The Wall. This is irresponsible. It's the height of irresponsibility for the commander-in-chief to suggest that we have to build a wall across our southern border because there are terrorists who are trying to invade the country. It couldn't be farther from the truth.
It is exactly the truth that there are people coming across this border that are trying to terrorize this country. And now she's saying, basically admitting that that's true. Now, why is she doing all this? Why is she acting like a border hawk for the next few weeks, which she will then abandon the second she wins? It's because of what's actually happening. The full extent of Biden-Harris criminal alien invasion revealed. This is Blaze Media. Make sure to go read the story. Let me give you a couple quotes. Data released by Immigration and Customs Enforcement this week revealed that there are over 13,000 non-citizens convicted of homicide and over 15,000 non-citizens convicted of sexual assault released in the United States. These are people that we found, we caught, we know they committed these crimes. They're convicted of them. And what do we do with them? Release them into the public so they can brush shoulders with you at the local Dunkin' Donuts. Congratulations, everybody. The data said there were 7 million migrants on the non-detained docket, which are those who are going through deportation proceedings but have not yet been detained. Of those who have not been detained, there are 425,431 convicted criminals. Wouldn't 431 be way more than enough? Wouldn't one be crazy? Imagine catching someone, finding out they're a rapist or a murderer and saying, yeah, release them into the public. They'll probably do really well here in the United States of America. What the hell could be your thought process in that moment? There are also 222,141 with pending criminal charges, including 15,811 with sexual assault convictions and 1,845 with pending homicide charges. Imagine you're a female, your daughter, your wife, your aunt, your grandma is the victim of a sexual assault by one of these people, and you find out the United States had them caught and released them into the country after they knew they were sexual assault criminals that were already convicted. Homicide convictions. Now, I have a really dark view about what the United States government is doing to us at this point. And frankly, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden are at the center of a lot of it. Even I would think if you caught a murder suspect, actually a convicted murderer, you wouldn't just release them back into. I mean, I would think it would be a bad idea to even release them back into Mexico. They should be in prison for as long as possible. Maybe you send them back to the country where they would be convicted so they could stay in prison. But releasing them into the general populace is insane. Why would you do such a thing? A statement from ICE blames sanctuary city policies for keeping immigration enforcement officials from detaining dangerous illegal migrants. ICE recognizes that some jurisdictions are concerned that cooperating with federal immigration officials will erode trust with immigrant communities and make it harder for local law enforcement to serve those populations, read the statement. However, sanctuary policies can end up shielding dangerous criminals who often victimize those same communities. Yeah. Go to my YouTube page. Look for the sanctuary cities bit. I mean, this is happening all over the freaking country. And, you know, Trump has spent a lot of time saying, well, they're sending us their worst. They're sending us their rapists. He did this in the initial 2015 speech coming down the escalator. He's mentioning this stuff. And of course, it's true. If you look at the data here, only about 10% of the people crossing the border are hardened criminals. But you know what? I find that to be too high. Maybe it'd only be 1 or 2% that are rapists and murderers. I find that to be too high. Do you find that to be too high? What is the correct amount of rapists and murderers to let into the country? I'm going to go with zero. I feel like we have enough nutballs in our country that are U.S. Born citizens that we don't need to import any. I'd like the number to be importing as to be about zero. That's why you have a process to look at people who come into the country. That's why you have a legal immigration process. And the ones that show up and they're like, oh, yeah, also, I've got a murder conviction. Sorry about that. Can I still come in? No, you can't. That's why you have the process. And these, remember, these are something like 600,000 total criminals, you know, tens of thousands of rapists and murderers. And these are the people we know about. There are a lot of people that obviously evade detection. You'd think the criminals would be the best at that. So they've evaded detection. They're already in here. We don't even know about them. And add on to that, I've got a little bit of a hesitation as to the quality of the Guatemalan record-keeping process to see how many murderers they actually let go here. How many are here? Do we know? Did all the Honduran rapists really show up on the records? How good are the records anyway? These are the ones we caught. These are the ones we know about. Some details. You see this. I mean, look, I'll just show you the quick charts. I mean, look, just running down. Bribery, burglary, civil rights violations, commercialized sexual offenses, damaged property, dangerous drugs, embezzlement, kidnapping, liquor violations. Yeah, some of them drink too much. Obscenity, violating the public peace, robbery, sex offenses not related to the commercial sex trade, sexual assault, smuggling, sovereignty, stolen property, tax revenue. Yet some of them aren't paying taxes. All of them aren't paying taxes in the United States. And of course, this is a concern not because they freaking care about you and your families. No, no. It's a concern because of this. Poll, Democrats' advantage is shrinking with Latino voters. You want some details on this? Here's NBC telling you the details.
We ask a basic question of Hispanic voters. Which party do you more identify with? 37% now say Republicans, 49% say Democrats. But again, look at how this has shifted in just the last dozen years. In 2012, this was a 41-point advantage for the Democrats. It has come all the way down to 12 points, Kristen, a 29-point drop in terms of that gap there on which party Hispanics identify with in just 12 years.
They're dropping. Why are they dropping? And it's interesting because you look at some of these polls and what you see is the change really happens after 2020. Trump improved slightly with Hispanic voters between 2012 to 2016 to 2020, a little bit of an improvement. But really, the change has been since 2020. And what is that? What do you account that for? I actually don't know yet. I haven't looked into the data, see if there's anything that we could, you know, suss out of it to find out what the actual cause of that is. My suspicion is maybe responding to the harsh COVID restrictions that came during the Biden administration after COVID had really kind of already passed. And maybe just the fact that Biden just sucks generally so badly, but that doesn't normally shake minority voters from Democratic candidates, to be frank. So I don't know what the reasoning is, but they're trying to do something about it. They're trying to say, no, we care. We care about the border. We care about these things now. Harris leads Trump among Latinos by the smallest margin measured in recent elections by NBC News polling. When it comes to sharing your values, which party do you think would do a better job? In 2022, 47% said the Democratic Party. That's falling to 39% among registered Latino voters. What about your opinions about immigration? Should we have more immigration? Well, would you say that immigration helps the United States more than it hurts it, or the immigration hurts the United States more than it helps? Well, it used to always be. I mean, 2016 was 69% of voters said that it helps more than it hurts. That's dropped to 62, but hurts more than it helps has gone up from 16 to 35%. Latino voters are individuals. They're people who want good things for their economy. They want personal lives to be better. They want safety for their family members. They don't want rapists and murderers coming across the border. That doesn't benefit them. It doesn't benefit you. It doesn't benefit anybody. I don't know who it benefits, frankly. But they keep letting it happen, so it must benefit somebody. It's a massive, massive problem, and it's causing what many are calling an invasion. And it's, you know, when you talk about a bunch of legal immigrants coming across the border, if you take out the chunk of them that maybe are here for financial benefit and aren't necessarily hurting the community in any intentionally negative way, I'm trying to be as kind as possible here, you might be able to make that argument that it's not an invasion. But when we're talking about tens of thousands of rapists and murderers coming across the border, and to be fair, we don't know how many did both. Maybe some, there's some crossover that they were both rapists and murderers. Honestly, like that, it's hard to talk about in any other way than to say that it's an invasion. These are people who are the worst in our society, just like Trump said at the base of that escalator in 2015. This is happening. It's a massive problem. You have to take massive problems seriously. Our country is not doing that. One country that seems to be doing it is the country of Israel. They're taking their problems really seriously right now. We're going to check in with Chuck Holton, who's over in the Middle East, and he's going to give us the latest on what's going on over there. Don't kid yourself, the future of the Supreme Court is even on the ballot right now, and these radical left people who want to eliminate the court's conservative majority by packing the Supreme Court, which is so short-sighted, by the way. There's not always going to be a conservative Supreme Court majority. As someone who really likes the conservative Supreme Court majority, which is very tiny, it's not 6-3, it's about 4.6 to 4.4 at this point, but long term, you don't want it packed either way. That's bad. Then presidents get in, they do all sorts of shenanigans. Who knows what goes on? Don't be fooled. The end game is court packing. And at First Liberty, they have been calling this out for a very long time, and they're calling it what it is, a Supreme Court coup. The Biden administration and Harris in the future are going to try to overwhelm the Supreme Court. They're trying to get rid of the filibuster. They're trying to do everything they can. That's why First Liberty is sounding the alarm. Take action. Do something about this. We can put a stop to the radical left's plan to take control of the Supreme Court. As the 2024 election approaches, I think it's 5 weeks away from tomorrow, we can do three things ourselves. We can find out where the candidates stand on these things. Make sure you vote for the right ones. You can share what you learn with everyone. You can do your civic duty to vote. And you can take one more step. You can say no to the left's Supreme Court coup by helping out First Liberty and getting on their mailing list. Make sure you understand exactly what's going on. Get involved. Thesupremecoup.com/stew is the website. Supremecoup.com/stew. Check it out now. Help turn over what the left is trying to do with the Supreme Court. It's supremecoup.com/stew.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
I'm joined once again by war correspondent Chuck Holton. You can catch him on CBN. You can also catch him on The Hot Zone, which you subscribe to, of course, wherever you get your podcasts. Chuck, thanks so much for coming back on the program.
Yeah, glad to be here, Stu. How you doing?
Really good. I appreciate it. And with what's going on in the Middle East, we have plenty to talk about. Israel's been on quite a run here over the past few weeks. Of course, we have the beeper attack and then the walkie-talkie situation, knocking out so many Hezbollah operators. And then this weekend, the head of Hezbollah is taken out. Can you tell us what's going on?
Yeah, that's right. After Operation Grim Beeper, as we're calling it, they've really been on a roll. Dropped more than 80 tons of bunker buster bombs on top of Nasrallah just to make sure he wasn't going to crawl out of there. And in fact, he did not. As a matter of fact, he was meeting with, they say, about 16 other high-level operatives from Hezbollah and from the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. And all of those guys went to meet their maker together. The smoking crater that was once the headquarters of Hezbollah underneath a civilian area in Dahiya, the neighborhood in southern Beirut, that place it was the nerve center for the terror group. And now that nerve center is gone. So the terror organization is reeling because they can't communicate by any of the normal means that they were used to. Heck, at this point, they're afraid of their toasters and refrigerators, with good reason. And they don't have any direct line. They've had all of their chain of command taken out. And so these guys are basically running on whatever the last orders that they received were, whatever contingency plans they'd come up with. In the the estimation of the quote unquote experts, if Israel had done something like this, the experts were saying that there would be full scale war with Hezbollah and that Israel would be seeing 5,000 to 6,000 rockets a day coming into their country from Lebanon for months at a time. And so far, they've had more than usual, about 200 rockets a day coming across. So what that says is that, number one, a lot of the launchers had already been taken out. They may have 100 to 150,000 rockets, but they don't have 100 to 150,000 launchers. And so Israel has been focusing on taking out the launchers, making sure that they're one-time use items. So as soon as something gets fired at Israel, they've got planes in the sky already that are targeting that launch site immediately to take out the launcher. And that means that a lot of these rockets are going to be basically useless in their bunkers because they're not going to have launchers to send them with. We are also hearing that all of this has been shaping operations for an expected ground assault into Lebanon, which could come at any time at this point. We have gotten word today that Israeli special forces are on the ground inside Lebanon conducting shaping operations. And shaping operations take many forms, Stu, right? You can talk about, I was in the Rangers 100 years ago, and we did shaping operations as special operations troops. And you go in, you do reconnaissance and intelligence gathering, identifying key positions and infrastructure and assets and things like that. You then map those out and gather intelligence on troop movements and supply routes, all with the objective of then passing that information along to the artillery and the Air Force so that they can do something about it and hurt some people's feelings down there in those sensitive sites. It's also these special forces guys could be going in there and doing target acquisition and designation. That means that they've got little infrared lasers, and they go find a target that's hidden under the trees. It's not visible from the air, but then they can laze those things from the adjacent mountaintop or something like that, and then a attack helicopter or an aircraft can fire a Hellfire missile, which then locks onto that laser signal and goes right into the target. So we don't know exactly what they're doing in there. There's some talk about them actually clearing some of the tunnels that are just north of the border. But suffice it to say that all of the things that they're doing are preparing the way for their ground assault troops when they go in. And that could be coming at any minute.
I mean, it really is a remarkable story. And, as you said, something that many people thought couldn't be done, or if it did, it would have much different response to it. Let me go back to the focus of where all these 80 tons of bombs dropped. There was rumor, at least, that whoever was going to take over if the head of Hezbollah was killed was also killed in this attack, or at least it seems like there's a long string of people. You mentioned 16 top leaders there. And what I hear from the media is, I actually heard this morning, they're like, this is what Israel calls one of the headquarters of Hamas or Hezbollah, as if it was like it could have been a dinner party. It could have been anything. This clearly was the headquarters. This clearly was the nerve center. And this strike is about as militarily justified as anyone I've seen in recent memory.
Well, and what's amazing is that the death toll is actually so low. Most of the people who were in the buildings, because there were like 6-story buildings on top of that site, and most of the people who were in those buildings got the message when Bibi Netanyahu stood up and gave a speech directly to the people in Lebanon and said, if you are near sensitive sites, if you are staying in a building that has any kind of military infrastructure in it, you should leave now. And they listened to that. And these people got in their cars and they left. They've had 120,000 people that have fled into Syria. Now, it's bad in your country if Syria is your option, right?
That's a good point.
But there have been more than 1 million people that have left their homes inside Lebanon and gone elsewhere. And what that does is it allows the IDF to see who's left. And anybody that's left down there is considered a valid target. And so the people now, here's something that is not being really talked about in this press right now. That speech that Netanyahu gave directly to the people in Lebanon came right before all of these strikes that they started making in these areas with on this military infrastructure. Well, guess what? Bibi Netanyahu gave the almost identical speech today to the people in Iran, directly in Iran. Now, I don't know if that portends anything, but if I was living in Iran and there was a missile in my house, I'd probably find a reason to go on vacation right about now. So you talk about them, the chain of command all being wiped out. They actually designated right away a new chief of Hezbollah, and he didn't last 12 hours. That guy got whacked in just hours. And then the next guy that's in line, they can't reach him. He's, you know, they're trying him on his beeper, but he's not answering. So, so I wouldn't be either, to tell you the truth.
This is amazing. It really is incredible to watch all this happen. And you know, they obviously have incredible knowledge of the moment to moment movements of almost seemingly every important person in this organization across the country. It's incredible. And then we get that thing where you say, okay, well, they've been firing rockets at Israel for a long time. Of course, people should understand that a military target is absolutely legitimate. And when we see the head of Hezbollah come down, this is how the Washington Post recalls it. They say Hezbollah leader and force in Middle East is killed. He was apparently an incredible speaker. His oratory moved people. Chuck, he's not remembered as a brutal, bloodthirsty terrorist, but instead this incredible speaker who inspired people across the country. It really is at that point where, like, you need to find someone in your life that looks at you like the Washington Post looks at terrorist leaders.
Well, you know, the Washington Post thought he was a great orator. Actually, I'm in Jordan now, and the people here and in Syria actually had a nickname for Nasrallah. They called him the trumpet because he just never stopped blowing his horn. When he would get up to speak, he would speak for 2 or 3 hours. People would be falling over in their chairs. So there's actually celebrations all across the Middle East now that he's gone. There are people, I was just in Armenia, and there are a lot of Iranians in Armenia who have fled the repressive regime in their own country. And all of them are telling me, look, the people in Iran don't hate Israel. We don't want this. We don't want this conflict. It's the leadership here. And they've destroyed our country's economy in the process. And we would love nothing more than to see Israel come and take our leadership out so that we could actually make peace with Israel again. The president of Lebanon actually said something along those lines just yesterday as well. So there are a lot of people in this area that are very happy now that Nasrallah is gone, and will be even happier if they can get rid of the rest of those jokers and actually have some peace and quiet around here for a while.
Chuck, last one for you. We got about a minute or two left here, but what's the big picture here? Because obviously Israel has shown they have incredible intelligence efforts, at least in these regions, and are able to hit kind of wherever they want at any time. They've sent that message very clearly to Iran. But trying to fight a potentially three-front war with Hamas and Hezbollah and Iran all at the same time, and God knows who else jumps into the fray, that is a difficult task for any nation. What's Israel's outlook here in the medium term?
Well, right now, Israel is done playing. I can tell you that for sure. And they are playing to win. They've finally gotten to the point where they are realizing that two of the fronts that they are fighting on are the United States Biden administration and the United Nations. And they're just done with that. And so talking to Israelis in Israel, talking to friends of mine and colleagues that are there, and even here in Jordan, they're saying, look, Israel is going to do what it has to do to be able to return its people to their homes. And if that means fighting the Houthis and the Hashashabi and Hamas and Hezbollah all at the same time, then so be it. We can handle that. And as a matter of fact, the United States has been bringing its significant pull to bear on Israel to try to force them into a 21-day ceasefire with Hezbollah. And Israel is saying, that's not going to happen. Yoav Gallant said today, talking to his troops, don't listen to what the media says. We're not going to do that because that would give up all of their momentum. And they have a chance right now to completely change the trajectory of the Middle East. They have a chance to actually bring peace in the Middle East by getting rid of these proxies that have been such a thorn in the side, not just to Israel, but to Jordan and to Saudi Arabia and to Syria and to Lebanon. And so they are seizing on this, and they're realizing that proportional force is the way that you get perpetual war until everybody runs out of money. That's all you get. They are realizing that they have got to start engaging in disproportional force, because the only way to win a war is to make your enemy beg you to stop and stop hurting him. And disproportional force is the only way to do that.
What are the odds of them going in? Are you convinced 100% that they are going in with ground troops into Lebanon?
Yes. It's going to happen. They wouldn't be doing these shaping operations with their special forces if that wasn't the case.
Chuck Holton, war correspondent. He's host of The Hot Zone. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Chuck, thanks for bringing us up to speed on this very complicated and very quick moving situation.
Sure thing, Stu. Anytime.
At glenbeck.com/pulsecast, we have the Pulsecast updated every single day. You can just keep refreshing that page and it'll be posted when we update it, usually in the mornings. And basically what it is a summary of all the data experts, polling averages, prediction markets, all that jazz. So you don't have to go look at a million different sites, try to understand what's going on. This doesn't tell you what's going to happen in the election. Doesn't tell you what my opinion is of what's going to happen in the election. But what it does tell you is what the mainstream experts are saying. And right now, Donald Trump has a 43.49% chance to be president of the United States, according to these experts. Kamala Harris at 56.51%, pretty much unchanged for the past week. Kind of a quiet week, actually. And I will say, like, this is a weird position. I've been doing this for a long time as far as elections analysis. I really probably started doing it seriously for the 2008 presidential election. And in every election since, I've had a really strong idea as to what I thought was going to happen in the election. Right now, I don't really even know. If I were to tell you I had a strong vibe, I have a concept of a vibe, if you will. I think that's just basically flavored by my general pessimism about things right now, that like I kind of just feel like Donald Trump is a little bit of an underdog solely for the perspective of I think bad things will happen. So that's not a reason. So I will say we are completely in I don't know territory right now. The Pulsecast shows a slight favor for Harris, but, you know, 45, 50, 55, that's really a toss up. Anything around that 50% area, I would say, is a toss up. A slight polling error, by the way, for Donald Trump, like the one that we saw in 2016 or 2020, has Donald Trump sweeping every single state that is a swing state. So that is where we are. It's incredibly close. As New York Times posts out, points out, it's a calm week, perhaps the clearest picture yet. Their point here is basically that nothing's really changed, but there hasn't been a lot of news. And it's been hard to judge what's going on because there's been so much crazy news, from assassination attempts to new candidates and all this stuff. Hard to judge what's going on. This has been kind of a calm week for news. Kamala Harris with a very slight lead. So maybe that's where she is. We'll say good polling for Donald Trump in Arizona and Pennsylvania this week, which would indicate maybe he's doing really well. National polling looking a little bit better for Harris right now. In North Carolina, Harris and Trump in a close race. As I mentioned, it's going to be really hard for Donald Trump to win this presidency if he does not win North Carolina. He's got to win that. In this poll, Harris is up by 2, 50-48. It is very, very close there. Alyssa Slotkin is a representative. She's warning that Harris is underwater in Michigan. What does that mean exactly? Who knows? It's very, very close. We don't know if this is just her trying to get more donations or if there's actual polling to back that up. That's private polling that we're not seeing. Jeff Flake has come out. Remember him? He was a senator from Arizona, kind of known as a fiscal conservative, but sort of a social liberal. He's come out and now endorsed Kamala Harris. I don't really understand this stuff, honestly. I can understand, like, if you say, well, you know, I don't like Donald Trump or whatever. Okay, whatever, fine. Even if you're going to say, I'm just going to sit this one out. I don't, you know, it's a risky play, but I can understand it. I don't understand supporting Kamala Harris if you're supposedly a fiscal conservative. I don't understand the endorsement of Kamala Harris. You want to sit it out? You want to zip your lip? That's one thing. To come out and endorse, I don't understand. How many people, though? How many Republicans are going over because Jeff Flake's like, yeah, he's my guy or she's my girl? How many people are going over to Kamala? I feel like that number is relatively low. But in some ways, it's a battle with people like Zachary Levi. He's an actor, Shazam star. He's been in a bunch of different stuff, though. He is saying he's endorsing Donald Trump for president. Now, what's interesting about him is he was an RFK, Tulsi Gabbard type of guy. So he's coming over because of the RFK thing. Who brings over more people, RFK to the Republicans or Jeff Flake to the Democrats? I'd be happy rolling the dice on that one. I think there's a clear answer to that one, and it's probably RFK in bringing people over to the Republicans. We will see. We also have Walls and Vance preparing for the 2024 debate. This is going on right now. I kind of expect this to be a debate that J.D. Vance does pretty well in. If you saw the Jim Gaffigan impersonation of Tim Walls, by the way, on Saturday Night Live, it was really funny. Now, they gave him no funny things to say as Tim Walls, because, of course, they have to just act like he's the greatest guy in the world. So no slams on Tim Walls. But his actual impersonation was hilarious. It was over the top and completely ridiculous. Dana Carvey was awesome as Joe Biden, just completely looking like he has no idea what's going on. I don't know if we'll see that in the vice presidential debate this time, but we're going to see lots of fireworks, I'm sure. We're going to be here to cover it for you on Blaze TV. It's part of your Blaze TV subscription. You can also watch it on YouTube. So you watch it. It's going to be myself. It's going to be there, a great panel. We'll be hosting this from, I don't know, it's about an hour or two before the debate. All the way through the debate, you can watch it live on Blaze TV. And then after the debate, we'll have a roundup of what just happened. Was there anything important? It's hard to move the needle on a VP debate, but we will see if anything happens. And then after all of that is over, we'll be live on YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. So anywhere on Blaze TV, you can subscribe, BlazeTV.com/Stu. Code is Stu40, and you can go there and subscribe. And then afterward, we'll have a live coverage on YouTube, YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Imagine for a moment that you're about to make the biggest financial decision most people make in their entire lives, either buying or selling a house or both. And what would it make to not only help in that situation, but have some real help, like help that moves the needle? That's what you have at realestateagentsitrust.com. You got to find the best real estate agent. This is not brain surgery here. You need to have the best possible agent on your side. But how do you find that person? That's the hard part. Realestateagentsitrust.com. Realestateagentsitrust.com will pair you with the best agent in your area, someone who knows all the best practices, someone who understands the crazy housing market, someone who's a team leader, someone you can trust. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com. It's a free service to you. Take advantage of it. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com, no matter where you are in the country. The name kind of says it all. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn. Und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
I was thinking the other day, I'm going to be like one of those guys that like says awkward things later in life, and I'm just like convinced I'm right. You know, like your grandpa says these things, and your kid's like, oh no, I can't believe you said that. I'm going to be the guy going like, the Washington Redskins lost today. Now, I'm going to be that guy because I refuse to say Commanders. I refuse to say football team. It's just silly. They're the Washington Redskins. Well, the Washington Redskins and the actual Native Americans portrayed in their imagery kind of pissed off at us what has happened. The family of the Blackfeet chief faces NFL Redskins, face of NFL Redskins for 48 years, wants his image back in the NFL. This guy's got the best name of all time. His name is John Two Guns Whitecalf. Yeah. The White Calf family has support in Washington, D.C. from one of their senators, while the NFL franchise itself, now known as the Commanders, is making new efforts to honor the team's heritage, trying to kiss their butt. The fans want him back, and they want we want him back, says Thomas White Calf, a great nephew of John Two Guns White Calf. Our ancestor was the most famous and most photographed Native American in history. He is also the face of the Indian Head Nickel. I'm proud of him. The Blackfeet are proud of him. Put him back. Yes, put him back on there. Now, I still want the Redskins to lose all their games because they're in the NFC East against the Eagles, but that's a whole other story. Okay, live coverage of the VP debate tomorrow night. Do not miss it. And then live coverage, Stu Does America YouTube page. Check it all out there. Use the code STU40 if you want to subscribe. Get $40 off.